the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
You see it just about every single week on the news, unemployment claims, more people losing their jobs, businesses going under. What will this mean long-term for the economy if you're a small business? What is it you can do? Joining me on the program is Daniel Pilla, an expert in small business. Dan, let's begin with what is happening. You know, let's say you own a pizza place, you own a restaurant or a small business. You've been doing well for decades. Who knows? Maybe it's a business that's been in the family. And all of a sudden, a virus comes along. The government shuts the business down. You have to close your doors. Let's talk about the impact on small businesses and how many of them realistically will be able to survive.
Yeah, that's a good question, Jim. And the short answer is we just simply don't know how many are going to survive. And it just really depends on how long these shutdowns continue. Of course, we're starting to see some relaxation of these orders here now, which is good. You know, if you'd asked me this question back in early April, I would have told you that I believed that the vast majority of businesses would survive because I thought that this was going to be relatively short-lived and that it would be like holding a basketball underwater, Jim. You know, you can artificially suppress the economy. You can artificially suppress a basketball 2 feet underwater, but the minute you take your hand off of it, it pops to the surface and everything restores, equilibrium again. And 3 months later, here we are, end of June, I can't say the same thing because these shutdown orders have continued much longer than certainly I thought. And who knows how much longer this stuff is going to continue. Now, as I said, they're loosening stuff up, but it's not business as usual by any stretch. And the fact of the matter is here's the other part of the problem. And this is the irony. You know, the government, federal government instituted as part of the CARES Act, it was pre-CARES Act. They instituted the $600 per week unemployment compensation for folks. And so now we've got people who have their normal state unemployment plus their $600 a week federal unemployment. A lot of these people are making as much or more money staying at home than they would be working for service, working in the service industry for places like a pizza parlor or a hotel, let's say. And so even the businesses that are inclined to get moving ahead here are at a disadvantage because they can't get their workers back.
You know, this is a situation where I think, what is it? We figured out it was almost like $23 an hour or over $20 an hour with unemployment benefits if you throw in the federal $600 a week. And what is the minimum wage, Dan? Isn't it something like, depending on the state, but it's right around $15? So how does $23 compete with $15?
Well, it simply can't, and there's no question about it. And you know, I can't tell you how many small business owners I've talked to here in the last 60 or so days that simply say to me, I can't get my workers to come back to work because they're making more money sitting on the couch. And this is the disincentive of unemployment. I understand the safety net. We recognize that people that are under hardship need some help. We don't have to have that conversation. We know that's true. But the fact of the matter is what, and this is an economic reality that we need to wrap our heads around as a society here, and that is, what you tax, you get less of, and what you subsidize, you get more of. When you load more and more employment taxes on businesses, you give them a direct disincentive not to hire people in the first place, which, of course, is what we don't want. And then when you subsidize those workers at 25% more money than they would make if they went to work, they're not going to work. And you know, it's not that complicated. And so this is just me talking. This is my opinion here. We're not solving the problem here by giving, millions of workers the incentive to just stay home and not go back to work.
Now, the government also tried to help small business. They had the PPP plan, but unfortunately, a lot of that money, Dan, especially in the first wave, did not get to where it was needed. Let's talk about that. And if you're a small business, what can you do? Do you think they may come out with another PPP plan? Because the problem I see here is if you give somebody like a business money to keep people employed, with the idea when you do open up, you have your employees, they go to work, and you have that V-shaped recovery that the government is looking for. But what happens if you've kept these people on the payroll with the PPP, but then in certain states, the governors aren't opening up the economy? So what do you do when the PPP plan runs out?
Well, you put your finger right on the problem that we recognized, you know, pretty early on after PPP was launched, and then recognizing that these stay-at-home orders and these shutdown orders were going to continue much longer than anybody thought. When the PPP was first announced through the CARES Act, the window was February 15th to June the 30th. Well, June the 30th is around the corner here now, and there's still a great number of businesses that either aren't open at all or are open only partially, and they might have gotten their PPP loans, and let's say they got 20, 40, 60,000, whatever it is, in some cases 100 grand or more, specifically to pay payroll, and they can't pay the payroll because A, they aren't operating, and so they can't have the workers anyway, and B, to the extent that they are operating, they might not be able to get their workers back for the reasons we talked about before. So there's been some flexibility that's been introduced to the program. On June the 5th, the Congress passed the Paycheck Protection Flexibility Act. And this changed the rules quite a bit. For one thing, the deadline is no longer June the 30th. The deadline now is you've got 24 weeks from the date your loan is granted or December 31st, 2020, whichever comes first, in order to spend your paycheck protection money and still qualify for forgiveness of the loan. That's number one. Number two is the requirement to spend 75% of your PPP loan on payroll is reduced to 60%. So that, and there's a number of other changes to the law as well. We can drill into that more if you like. But those are two critical issues that are going to give us some relief from the problem you just identified here, which is the big issue with PPP is how can I spend my money when my business isn't even open.
Now, there's another issue, too, and let's just take restaurants. A lot of restaurants, Dan, as you know, make their big bucks or they make their profitability on the weekend, Friday, Saturday night. They overturn the tables two or three times. If your restaurant can not open up inside, we have restaurants here that are setting up tables in parking lots. You can only operate at 25 to 30% capacity. You got to do two things. Either one, you've got to have a lot of turnover, or you're going to have to raise prices. How do you make it when something like this happens?
Well, and that's a huge problem as well. And I've been saying this all along as well, Jim, and that is, you know, if you've got a restaurant that's mandated to operate at, let's say, a third of capacity or even a half of capacity, you know, that means a cheeseburger is going to cost $38. And who's going to do that, Jim? The American people are not going to go into restaurants and spend exorbitant amounts of money on eating out because the restaurant has to raise the prices so significantly to cover its cost of operation. You know, I live in Stillwater, Minnesota. I work in Stillwater, Minnesota, which is a little town on the river here between Minnesota and Wisconsin. It's considered a tourist town because of the river traffic. And, you know, there's restaurants up and down the Riverwalk. It's, you know, you've seen these types of places around. And normally in the summertime, Stillwater, particularly on the weekends, is shoulder to shoulder with people walking down the street, shopping in the stores, eating at the restaurants. Well, I was at a restaurant the other day. They finally opened up at 50% capacity. And this place has got a magnificent terrace on the river, Jim. And I'm telling you, there was almost nobody on that terrace. Now, how is that possible? Beautiful day in Minnesota in the summertime, terrace restaurant on the river, and no one's there. You know, it's astonishing that the short answer here, Jim, is it still remains completely unpredictable what this recovery is going to look like and how businesses are going to survive in the long term. One thing is for sure is businesses need to be very, very careful about how they spend that paycheck protection money so that they can at least get their loan forgiveness without any problems or hitches in the process.
Let's talk about that. What does a business need to know in order not to have to pay back the loan? In other words, the grant is forgiven.
Well, first thing is you got to understand what you can spend the money on. All right, let's be real clear about this. Now, the rules have changed only slightly, but in the one significant area. Under the old rules, you had to spend 75% on payroll. Now, under the new rule, but based on the June 5th Paycheck Protection Flexibility Act, then you only have to spend 60% of your PPP money on payroll. All right, the other 40% can be spent in one of three areas: utilities for your business. This all has to be business now, of course. Utilities for your business, interest on any business loans, not principal, Jim, but interest only. And then the third area is rent for business facilities. All right. So you've got to spend at a 60-40 ratio between payroll and those other three items. That's number one. So first and foremost, you have to be able to keep. You must keep very careful, very accurate records of how that money's spent, because you're going to have to prove that you spent it in an authorized manner. All right. I recommend that businesses make sure they segregate their PPP proceeds from other general business revenue. Don't take your PPP money and drop it into your general operating business operating account and then use the money for all your various business expenses and then try to segregate how the PPP money went. Keep that money in a separate account and use that money solely and exclusively for any one of those four items, and make sure that you're at 60% on your payroll, unless you've got one of the safe harbor reasons why you don't have to meet the 60% rule, which was something else that was talked about in the Flexibility Act. All right. So there is some flexibility there. But the key thing is this, and you need to understand this, and anybody that's dealing with the government, particularly at the IRS, of course, that's my expertise, 40 plus years of litigating with the IRS in tax disputes, all right, with small businesses in particular. And so the burden of proof is on the taxpayer, Jim. This is, your listeners need to wrap their heads around this. The government never has to prove you did it wrong. You have to prove you did it right. So the burden is on you. You need to have the documentation to prove this. And I promise you, if you're commingling PPP funds with your general operating account, you're going to have a problem.
Let's be optimistic and assume that maybe in the first quarter they're talking about there's a vaccine. The question I see here, Dan, is there's a lot of businesses who are now going under. They're not coming back. What is this economy going to look like? I mean, we're at double-digit unemployment rate. We did in 3 months what took almost 3 years during the Great Depression. So a lot of these businesses aren't going to come back. What's going to replace them, and what will the economy look like?
Well, and that's a good question. You know, the one thing about the United States economy is it's remarkably resilient, despite all the pressure that's put on it by government through millions and millions of regulations that businesses have to comply with. And I'm not just talking about the tax regulations. I'm talking about the entire universe of regulations, which is massive and remarkably expensive for small businesses, any businesses, to comply with. And yet the economy is remarkably resilient. I think one thing for sure, Jim, is this pandemic is going to teach businesses, particularly mid-size and larger businesses, that they do not need to spend massive amounts of money on office space. You know, we've all been working remotely and working from home, and in even my office, we set up remote operations for some of my staff. And you know what? These businesses that have had 20,000 or 30,000 square feet of prime office space on the 32nd floor of a building downtown someplace are going to realize that they simply do not need to spend that kind of money to maintain their productivity with their employees. I think that's going to be a big lesson that's going to help businesses tremendously. Now, the other side of that coin is 3 years from now, you're probably going to get a good deal on a 30-story office building downtown someplace, but the fact of the matter is that kind of thing is going to help businesses for sure. There's no doubt about that. I'll tell you what I'm really concerned about here is the inflationary effects on this spending. You know, the government has spent a staggering amount of money in the last 4 months on COVID-19 relief, not the least of which is the Paycheck Protection Program, which the Congressional Budget Office has estimated is going to add almost $700 billion worth of deficits here over the next just 2 years. The Congressional Budget Office also estimates that almost $1.8 trillion in deficits are going to be added by the CARES Act, apart from PPP. And the list goes on and on and on, Jim, of how much deficits are going to be added here as a result of this. And so my concern is that okay, fine, we've got a vaccine in place, or the thing just burns itself out, or however that works. I'm no medical expert, but however that works, okay, fine, we get reestablished, but now a loaf of bread is going to be $23 because of the inflation.
You know, that's funny, Dan. I was in the supermarket last week, and there was an older gentleman right next to me, and he was looking at two ribeye steaks, not even prime, $46. And he says, I can't believe I've never seen prices like this. So that's the other concern, and I share that with you. If you restrict supply, either companies go under, they're not operating at full capacity, and yet demand is still there because the demand is being created. The government's sending people checks, as you mentioned, the federal government giving people plus state unemployment of $600 a month. So you have the money to spend, but the companies that create the service or the product aren't operating at full capacity, so there's less of it. There's only one thing that can happen. The price has to go up.
And as a matter of fact, you take any one of those elements in isolation, all right, either restricted the supply of product or increased purchasing power in the form of fiat money printing press money that's put into the marketplace. Either one of those two items in isolation, events in isolation, is going to cause prices to rise. Put the two of them together and what do you get?
You can see this happening. And I want to talk about, I guess maybe on the positive side, the pandemic has accelerated trends that were already in place. And I'm thinking, Dan, of online shopping. Stores that seem to be making it are the Walmarts, the Targets, the Costco, which have a large online presence, the big box stores. So that trend. We talked about businesses needing less office space. So that's a trend that's likely to go forward. What are some of the other trends that you see going forward? I just don't see the restaurant experience being the same, at least until people really feel assured. I had a client that went into a very well-known steakhouse, and he said it was so surreal. You had to stand in line outside. Then you had to wear a mask. When they let you in the restaurant, there were tables so far spaced apart that you had to sit down at the table. But if you got up to go to the bar to get a drink or use the restroom, you had to put your mask on. And he said it just didn't feel the same. And then I said, well, what about takeout? And he said, you know what? When it comes to takeout, I might as well just go to the store and get my own steak and have my own glass of wine.
Well, yeah, and I personally agree with that view. I mean, what's the point of doing all the takeout when you can, you know, just enjoy yourself at home without the added expense, for sure. Listen, I don't know. I mean, the only intellectually honest thing to say here is I don't know exactly what this is going to look like 6 months from now. The restaurant industry and really any service industry is going to be significantly impacted. Look at the hotel industry. You know, I mean, that's the same sort of thing that we're seeing. And what are we going to see with air travel? You know, I had to travel by air in April, toward the end of April. And I'm telling you what, you talk about a surreal experience going through the Columbus, Ohio airport to get home to Minneapolis. I mean, it was like a ghost town. I never saw anything like it. Now, on the flip side, on the more positive side, I think we're going to see a tremendous surge in not just online shopping, Jim. You've identified that, you know, that's a big deal already, and it's only going to get bigger. But I'm talking about online business activity, generally speaking. I've been doing Zoom conferences. I have a team of tax professionals that I work with, about 70 or 80 tax pros around the country, attorneys and accountants that work with my organization, the Tax Freedom Institute. We defend people that have ongoing problems with the IRS audits and collection problems, that sort of thing. And, you know, we've been meeting by Zoom, and I'm telling you, it's very, very efficient, very, very effective. And so these types of business activities, business engagements are only going to grow. I think they're going to increase productivity for businesses. And you know, the thing about it is this, you know, as I said before, that the United States economy is quite flexible. It's quite, it's got tremendous endurance and the creativity. And this is the beauty of liberty, Jim. When people are left to think for themselves and cope on their own, then the creative juices flow and things are invented. You know, things become developed that we could never even have imagined because somebody saw a need, somebody had a creative genius, somebody had the juices flowing, and the next thing you know is we get the, you know, we get the automobile or we get the cell phone or we get the, you know, the jet engine or, you know, all of these, the scanners, all these things that you know, guys like me could not imagine even existing, and yet they come out because of the freedom of thought and creativity that goes along with a free society. My biggest concern, I'll tell you what my single biggest concern is coming out of this, is not the resilience of the economy. I've got faith in the American people to, you know, to build businesses and grow businesses. My concern is the heavy-handedness of the government to come in and try to quash all of this stuff in the name of quote-unquote safety. That, I mean, listen, there's all kinds of excuses the government can use to get away with encroachments. But number one on the list is, Jim, this is for your own good. We have to impose these restrictions on your liberty for your own good. And most people just say, well, yeah, I guess it's for my own good. I guess I have to go along. That's my concern.
Let me ask you, too, one of the other things, it's almost like a 1-2 punch to the economy. Is we had COVID, we had the lockdown, and now we have the riots. We're seeing statues being pulled down all the way around. I had a sister-in-law that worked at a major department store. They were shut down during the lockdown. They opened up for 2 weeks, Dan, and then all of a sudden the protesters showed up and torched part of the mall, and they had to send the employees home because it wasn't safe.
Yeah. You know, I live in Minnesota, as you know. I'm about 25 miles from the Lake Street in Minneapolis. Lake Street was that east-west main artery in Minneapolis that was practically burned to the ground, about a three-mile stretch. Jim, there were about 60 or 70 businesses that were burned to the ground in those riots. And Lake Street is a small business ethnic community. All right. In fact, this is in an area of Minneapolis called the Phillips neighborhood, which is widely regarded as one of the most diverse neighborhoods in the entire United States. There's over 160 different languages spoken in the Phillips neighborhood. We're talking about roughly a 1 square mile area of South Minneapolis. And right in the heart of the Phillips neighborhood is Lake Street. All these ethnic businesses there, Jim. Grocery stores of every kind you can imagine, restaurants of every kind you can imagine, small businesses of service businesses of, you know, tailors and just on and on and on with the small mom and pop operations, jewelry stores, just go down the list, right? 66 burned to the ground and well over 300 damaged severely by either smoke, fire, or water, or just, you know, bricks through the windows. I'm telling you, this is insanity. This is abject insanity, and we're going to see it getting worse and worse and worse as time goes on here.
Yeah, I think it's just going to change the combination of the riots, looting, the virus. Dan, it's one of those seminal events in a person's lifetime. At least in my lifetime, I've never seen anything like this. That's going to change people's behavior, whether it's going out to restaurants, whether it's going to a theme park. They just announced today they're pushing back the opening of Disneyland. I can't imagine Disneyland ever looking the same, where you're going to have people standing next to each other in crowded conditions waiting an hour to get on a ride after COVID. So I think this is one of those big, big game changers. And as I said, who knows what this is going to look like when we come out of this?
Yeah, it's a game changer, no question about it. I don't know how old you are, Jim. I'm 62 years of age. I have never seen anything like this in my lifetime. I've been in the front lines with the war against IRS encroachment and IRS abuse. And that's, you know, that's my background training and expertise is in fighting the IRS. And I've been litigating with this agency for over 40 years. But that's fine. But I'm telling you, I've never seen anything like what's going on right now, ever. And I, you talk about a seminal event, man, this is it. And I think I'm going to get a little political here, and I'm not going to apologize for it. I'm telling you, we're seeing the early stages of an orchestrated Marxist revolution that's specifically designed to tear down the American Republic. I just believe that with every fiber of my being. And we've got to stand up and push back against that, particularly with our young people, Jim, because they don't understand the value of liberty. They don't understand the value of a free market system. And they somehow think that communism is a better economic solution than capitalism. Jim, it's insanity.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, because if you take a look at some of the precepts on whether it's BLM or some of these other groups, it is Marxism, and they're talking about it. They don't believe in private property. You don't have the right to own it. And also, you don't have the right to think, or what you think is going to be censored. And we're that's the other thing I think that is very tough here, Dan, is to see the censorship that's being done right now. I mean, there was a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer that lost his job for saying storefronts and buildings matter.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. And you talk about the censorship, the tearing down of the statues certainly is a form of censorship. And it just shows the profound ignorance, unfortunately, of our youth these days. In San Francisco, they tore down the statue of Ulysses S. Grant. Ulysses S. Grant is singularly responsible for the 14th Amendment and the 15th Amendment. The 14th Amendment created equal protection for all citizens, you might say especially blacks, during post-Civil War era. And then the 15th Amendment guaranteed the right to vote to all citizens. And again, you might say especially blacks. As president of the United States for 8 years to ensure the right to vote for black people. And it is also a little known fact that Grant was singularly responsible for crushing the Ku Klux Klan in the South during the 1870s, when these folks were out there physically disrupting black people in their ordinary commerce and in their voting. Grant's the one who stopped that. And these ignorant people are tearing down his statue. He should be on that statue should be on a float going down Main Street someplace in a parade.
It's just absolutely amazing. So Dan, as we sort of sum up here, a couple key things. If you are fortunate enough and you did get funds from the PPP, your recommendation is to put those funds in a separate account so you have a direct accounting of how you spend it on payroll, rent, utilities, etc. That way you have an audit trail when it comes to the time of forgiving the loan.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's probably the single most important thing you can do. And then secondly, you must understand how that money can be spent and make absolutely sure you're spending it in the proper way.
And Dan, if our listeners would like to contact you, you are considered one of the top experts in the country when it comes to small business tax. How can they find out more about your organization?
Yeah, you can go to my website, which is taxhelponline.com. It's all one word, no spaces of any kind. Taxhelponline.com. I would introduce your listeners to my brand new book, Dan Pilla's Small Business Tax Guide, which is going to give you an excellent presentation on how to keep your business out of trouble with the IRS, how to stay square with the IRS. It's called taxhelponline.com is the website. Dan Pilla's Small Business Tax Guide. And I'll say this, Jim, anybody that purchases a book from me off my website gets a free 15-minute consultation directly and personally with me over the phone. So it's a good way for me to help you work through some of the kinks. So taxhelponline.com.
Dan, thanks so much for coming on the program.
It's my pleasure, Jim. Thanks for having me.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.